Good morning. I'm Maureen Watson-Bolger with McKelvey Merchant & Associates, and we're proud to represent the Michigan corn growers. I want to thank all of you for attending this forum to hear from candidates for Michigan's governor about their positions and policies on agriculture. This event is hosted by a coalition of 17 agriculture organizations, representing a broad cross-section of Michigan's agriculture industry. I also want to thank each of the candidates for taking the time to speak with us today. Before we begin, a few housekeeping items and some rules. This is an educational forum and an opportunity to hear the positions of each candidate. Please be respectful and refrain from displaying signs or interrupting candidates. Each candidate will have 7 to 10 minutes to introduce themselves and lay out a broad platform on agriculture. Then we will take questions from the sponsoring agriculture organizations and the audience. This is a forum, not a debate, which means the candidates will each have equal time to answer the questions and will not respond to each other's answers. To ask a question, you can write it on the back of the card you received during check-in, and you can raise your hand and someone will collect it. You can also text your questions in to 616-528-8324. Joining us this morning from the Republican Party, we have Senator Patrick Kolbeck and Dr. Jim Hines. Senator Kolbeck, would you please begin?
All right, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity, and thank you, everybody, for joining us today. I think we're going to be joined by Lieutenant Governor here shortly, so I appreciate the opportunity to come out and say hi to everybody. I think he's familiar with my background. And if can somebody not hear the microphone, is that what's going on?
The mic's not mic.
I got a green light, but, or at least what passes for it with me being red, green, colorblind.
Testing. Hey, what do you got? Okay, so you guys all know I'm colorblind now. All right. Anyway, my name is Patrick Kolbeck. I'm currently serving in the Michigan's 7th Senate District, which is, if you got your Michigan map out, it's right out in the base of the thumb. I'm out in Wayne County, probably one of the most rural districts you're going to find here in Michigan. So I'm just kidding. So I appreciate the opportunity to get a little bit of history and background on me and some of the policies I'd like to implement as your next governor. My background's a little bit unique from a lot of the folks you're going to see running for this position. First of all, I've got over 2 decades in the private sector, so I've been living under the laws that we're all dealing with, and I've got 2 terms serving in the Michigan Senate. So I've actually got quite a bit of experience on how government works, how government's supposed to work, and how it really works, and there's a difference. So in the private sector, what you'll find out is that my background's very unique from the standpoint that I have bachelor's and master's degrees in aerospace engineering, went on to study life sciences at the International Space University in Strasbourg, France. One of my instructors was actually Buzz Aldrin. One of my focuses of that study, which is germane to today's topic, was something called controlled ecological life support systems. So if you think it's tough growing crops here, try growing them up in space and trying to use that as something you're going to be dependent upon for your life. So when you're talking long-term space travel, the idea of bringing up all the water and consumables is something that just doesn't work from my mass balance perspective. You got to figure out how to make it work inside a tin can and how do you replicate essentially many of the processes that we have here on the Earth. So that's been a lot of my exposure into the life science world, and frankly into a lot of hydroponics and aeroponics discussion, got into that quite a bit. And I worked out in with Lockheed Missiles and Space Company actually for a while out in California on early plant vivariums and learning how to do high density plant growth for a space application. So I'm not exactly, despite coming from Wayne County, I've got some familiarity with some of the issues, at least when it comes to growing crops. And I know this is a high-tech industry, and I think you'll appreciate the fact that I do have a very high-tech background. I went to work for Boeing on the International Space Station afterwards. I was responsible for designing various systems on the on Space Station, including the environmental control and life support system, and went on to work for the Department of Defense and on advanced training simulation systems for the Department of Defense. Then came back home to Michigan, where I started my own small business. And so I understand what it's like to run your own business. and a lot of the pressures that you're facing in that context as well. When it came to coming back into state government, obviously, you know, I've served in the state senate for a couple of terms. So I've got a track record. I've been established as the most conservative senator serving in the Michigan Senate. Last two terms in a row, been most conservative senator in 3 out of the last 7. A lot of people run as conservatives during the election, but I've actually got a track record that backs that up. It's a little bit unique in that context, is that you can say anything you want on the campaign trail, but one thing you'll find with me is that when I say I'm going to go off and do something, that's exactly what I go off and do. And it's been recognized by a lot of folks that you may recognize. So I've been endorsed by Sean Hannity, and the reason I've been endorsed by him is because of my work on free market healthcare reforms, both at the state level and federal level. Actually, I've been nationally recognized by groups like Forbes.com, who've published several of my papers, and I've actually helped other state legislatures pass some of the same reforms that we've been promoting here in Michigan, with the intent that the more traction we get at the state level, the more attention we're going to get up at the federal level to do some good reforms. I've been endorsed by Bob Lutz because of my economic development policies, and Bob Lutz is a automotive legend and former Marine Corps aviator. I've also been endorsed by Jack Lausma, who's a former Skylab astronaut and Marine Corps aviator. Been endorsed by Dave Agema, Air Force aviator, and former National Committee man, or Republican National Committee man here for the state of Michigan. Got the endorsement of Senator Ted Cruz because of my principled stance. You will find that I'm very focused on doing what is right, not just what is politically expedient, and I've got a track record to back that up. And we've got numerous endorsements from people of faith all across the board. What you will find with me as your next governor is you will find somebody focused upon principled service, and I just want to summarize these principles out of the gates. Number one, the number one principle is that the government works for us, not the other way around. And it's a principle we forget about sometimes. Number two, our policies are meant for the equal benefit of all of our citizens, not for the special few with the ears of the power brokers up in Lansing. Article 1, Section 1 of the Michigan Constitution talks about the fact that we're supposed to provide equal benefits for all of our citizens. The next thing is that everything we're supposed to do is supposed to follow the Constitution. I took an oath to support the Constitution, and I've taken hits when I've actually gone off and taken a stand in defense of the Constitution, including most recently around some ex post facto provisions and some legislation that's being promoted, which is blatantly unconstitutional, no matter how you may feel on the particular topic. Another thing that's really important is that tax increases or fee increases should always be the last option pursued, not the first option. And then something else that a lot of people don't like to talk about because they try to divide all these issues into social issues and fiscal issues is that there's a key principle that you cannot have sustained fiscal prosperity in the absence of a moral and religious society. If you can't trust the person you're sitting across the desk from, that's not a good foundation for doing any sort of business transaction, much less any sort of community transaction. So it's something I feel very strongly on. The principled solutions that come from that are varied. There's quite a bit of them, and you can go out to ColbeckForGovernor.com and get all the details. But I'm an advocate for the elimination of the state personal income tax, and the senior pension tax goes along right with it. I'm a big believer in free market health care reforms. I'm probably the most outspoken opponent to the current road policy, which just throws money at the roads instead of actually focusing on building higher quality roads. And I've actually got mechanisms to build the roads so that they last longer, which is something that we need, because if you actually build these roads to last longer, you actually lower the total maintenance cost of the roads, not throw more money at it. And I'm tired of roads being built and then 5 months later falling apart. And I don't know about what you guys feel on that, but that's something I will be focused on. And when it comes to economic development policy, which I think is going to be a topic that we're going to be discussing quite a bit here today, I'm for broad-based economic development incentives, which means that I don't want to target specific industries or specific sizes of businesses for economic credits. I believe that our policies should provide equal benefit for everybody. And just to show you where I'm coming from, I was a management consultant for over 11 years. Total cost of business operations is very important for business owners. If you can lower the total cost of business operations, you can increase the wages for your employee, you can hire more employees, and you can be more competitive in the marketplace. Well, I can lower the total cost of business operations by lowering the cost of government. i.e. eliminating the state income tax. Number two, lowering the cost of healthcare on the order of 20% or more, which is through my free market healthcare reforms while getting better care. And also, you can lower it via energy costs and getting more competition in the energy market and lowering overall costs there. And the best thing about that approach to economic development is that it also benefits our families. And that's something that we don't talk about too much when it comes to some of the policies up in Lansing. So just to summarize, when you see me up there as your next governor, what you're going to find somebody is not somebody who just talks about principles on my campaign placards and palm cards. It's somebody who actually lives it. And every solution that I put forward will be a principled solution that puts you at the top of the priority chain. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Dr. Hines, would you share your platform with us?
It is great to be here, and I appreciate each of you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hear what we have to say. I want to start off by saying that I am not an agricultural expert, but I want to talk to you about my experience on the farm, and then we'll go into who I am and what I've done. I grew up as a city guy, but my grandfather was a farmer, and from the time that I was age 8 to the time I was 12, 13, 14, I spent a lot of time on the farm. In fact, I spent every summer and almost every weekend on his dairy farm. He milked about 50 cows, had 100 hogs, we say in Indiana, hog, and you say hog? Is that how you say that? Okay. We also raised rabbits and chickens and farmed for tomatoes and watermelon. It was a great place for me to learn how to work, because Grandpa didn't just let me run around, I had to work. When I was 12 years old, I learned to drive a tractor. He taught me how to shoot my first .22 rifle and then sent me out to shoot squirrels so that we could have squirrel for supper and shoot frogs. It was great. The one thing I didn't really like was baling hay. I enjoyed the manure spreader though. So I would get on the tractor and we'd fling that manure out in the fields. So that's my experience. I have a great appreciation for farm life because of my grandfather, and I'm so appreciative of that. Currently, I'm an OBGYN doctor. I've delivered thousands of babies. I'm a robotic surgeon. I was on the teaching staff with Michigan State University for 17 years, and currently I'm an associate clinical professor with Central Michigan University. I understand education, and I understand health care. My wife and I worked as medical missionaries in the Central African Republic for 4 years, where I ran 2 hospitals and 20 urgent care facilities. The Central African Republic is an agrarian society where the people are farmers. They farmed peanuts and they farmed cotton. And those are the patients that we took care of, about 1.5 million people. Into the third year of working there, the Chadians came in from the north through a very open border and started taking hostages and killing people. I became a trauma surgeon for a year, taking out bullets, doing amputations on the farmers that I loved. We stayed because we wanted to save as many people's lives as we could possibly save. I understand the necessity for secure, strong country borders and a population that can protect themselves. I also like music. I'm an outsider. I am not a politician. I have never run for a political office ever before. Certainly, I have chaired many boards. I've done international work and national work, but I'm not a politician. I've been a small business owner for 22 years. I'm the former chief of the medical staff of Covenant Healthcare, a large healthcare facility with over 500 doctors on staff, the former president of the Christian Medical and Dental Association with 18,000 members. I'm pro-life, pro-Second Amendment, pro-family, pro-small limited government. My wife and I, she's here, we've been married for 43 years. We have 7 sons and 15 grandchildren. Sorry to say that all 15 grandchildren and 5 of my sons don't live in Michigan. Michigan was not right for them when it came to decide the education that they needed or the work that they would have. I would love to bring them back to Michigan. I'm running for governor because I want to make a better Michigan. I want to put people first and not politics. People first and not politics. So often the politics, the lobbyists kind of get in the way and they inhibit. We see increased regulations and stresses and problems. I want a Michigan where entrepreneurs and businessmen and, yes, farmers thrive. I want a Michigan where each of you in this room, your businesses thrive. How is that possible? I believe it's possible by keeping taxes and regulations and spending under control, as low as possible. We have a workforce issue here in Michigan right now. Businesses are screaming for laborers that will work. Those that are available can't pass a drug test. Those that can pass a drug test, they haven't learned how to work. They didn't grow up on the farm. They simply don't know how to work, and they need to be brought along. You don't just say, well, do this or do that. They have no clue. We have way too many kids who can't read. They can't read. We have way too many high school graduates that can't read and are not prepared for either college, trade school, or the workforce. That has to change. You can't toss money at that problem. We have to figure out what the problem is, and we have to correct it, not now, not next year. The problem has to be solved. We need a Michigan where the water is clean and drinkable. That's all I would ask. Water that's clean and drinkable, and where potholes are rare. We need to make sure that there's not lead in our water, that there's not chemicals in our water that will poison us, perhaps lead to cancer. We do need to fix our potholes. We need to do more than just toss stuff in the hole, though. We need to fix them like we're a dentist, where we clean out the hole and we properly prepare it so that our roads last. You know, when you have a small pothole, it's easier to fix than you have a really big one where you can fall in. To do these things, we need strong leadership. We need someone who will bring in fresh ideas and new ideas, not the same old ideas that politicians bring. I believe I'm that person. I'm Jim Hines. Thank you.
Thank you. And Lieutenant Governor Calley, if you would share your platform with us.
Well, thanks so much for the invitation to be here. And it's an honor to be to share the stage with Dr. Hines and Senator Colbeck. We've actually appeared together all across the state in many different types of forums for many different organizations. And there's one thing that we tend to have in common, or one thing all these forums tend to have in common, other than open questions, anybody can come in and ask any question that you want, is that there's a certain guy that's missing at every single one of them, literally every single one of them. And so one thing I would ask you to consider is when it comes to the process of running for governor, who are the candidates that feel that it's important to make themselves available to you to be measured up next to other candidates to ask questions, and which are the ones that are running an entitlement type of a campaign where they don't feel they need to do these sorts of things. To me, this really is the same thing as a job interview. You are the boss, we are the applicants. And we're here to take those questions directly from you and to share ideas and thoughts on the future. And that's just an important, integral, and essential part of the process. Now, I wanted to start with just a little bit of background, actually going back to when I was 17, and my now wife brought me home to the farm for the first Sunday dinner. And she warned her parents that, you know, and now it's been for 34 years, I've been a vegetarian, so that, you know, the corn guys and the soybean guys like me, and the pork and the beef guys are like, wait, what? But when we came home, when I came home to the farm to meet Julie's parents, she said to her mom, she said, Mom, he's a vegetarian. And so, you know, at dinner, just make sure that everything's okay with that. So I come over after church, and they put out the plate, and there's chicken. And she said, Mom, he's a vegetarian. And she said, no, it's not meat, it's chicken. You know, it started a tradition when we were first married. We got married when I was 19. And we're still married today, by the way. And so we started a tradition of going home to the farm every Sunday. And in the beginning, it was more about, you know, we lived in an apartment and made minimum wage, so it was a free meal and laundry. And yet, to this day, still, every Sunday, we go home to the farm for and it's a Susquecentennial farm, by the way, for Sunday dinner. The kids love it there. My brother-in-law has now an Angus beef operation, and he and his wife, and before that, my father-in-law, Ron, and those who went before him were dairy farmers. I wanted to, first of all, acknowledge the importance of the industry itself. So agriculture and food, and you consider food and agriculture and the value-added process and so forth, it's in Michigan, it's enormous. It's over $100 billion every single year in economic impact. There are about 50,000 farmers across our state that produce about 300 different commodities. It's one of the most diverse agricultural offerings you'll find anywhere in the country. And on top of that, it's not just a matter of having a whole bunch of variety in our state and a whole bunch of know-how on how to grow things, but it's also leadership. And 36 different commodities were top 10, and 8 were number 1, literally number 1. I mean, it's such a huge, important part of our culture and our history and our economy, and I want to thank you for your part in that. Even when Michigan was down and having hard times, really this industry is one that just kept on producing. I'm really proud of what you do every day, and as we move forward into the future, we have to be really careful not to take it for granted. One of those baseline conditions in Michigan that makes such a big difference with agriculture is the Right to Farm Act. And it's been around for a while, right? But we can't take it for granted, because as farms become more and more efficient and it takes fewer and fewer people to produce more and more food, we have to be very intentional about making sure that our state and the people in our state understand, number one, the importance of the industry, but number two, what it takes to feed the world. And that's a really important role that we play here in the amount of production that happens. Now, I actually came out of banking myself. I was in banking for 10 years before I ran for the state house. I served in the house during some very, very difficult years. It seemed like Michigan, toward the end of that lost decade, we were at the bottom of every list you'd want to be at the top of, and the top of every list you'd want to be at the bottom of. But when we made the changes, changed the basics, it was things like balancing the budget, the sorts of things that you have to do every day to survive. When Rick and I came to town with a whole new Senate and a whole new House of Representatives all ready to deal with the problems of the past and not just fix things but to completely reinvent them, we started with the basics. It was major tax reform. Decided to scrap the old tax code and start fresh, brand new. We went from 49th in the country. Now, you know, the governor, he always says relentless positive action. He likes to be positive about things. So I'll say that we were 49th best in the country before. But you know, we're 8th now. We're 8th, according to the Tax Foundation. Went from 49th to 8th, at least leap to best practice. No other state since the existence of the Tax Foundation has ever done that before Michigan did. We also balanced the budget. Right? A lot of people talk about balancing the budget. You know, I actually had to break the tie to get it done in 2011 when we first started. But it's this idea of there being a reasonable relationship between the money coming in and the money going out. It's not really that complicated, but it takes hard work. And you have to have the guts to actually do it, because there's an organized constituency behind every single line item in state government. So I've been tested in that fire. When it came down to the vote, literally, the deciding vote to balance the budget in 2011 and restart things, it was me. And then moving forward to start this tradition of 4 months early is the new on time. You know, I noticed in the back, Tim Skubik, you know, in a couple years, and Tim, I'm talking about you. Good. You know, there was one time when the budget got done a couple weeks later than when we thought, but it was still in June. And I heard Skubik say, well, the budget's a couple of weeks late now. And at first I thought, well, that's unfair. You know, it used to be that it wasn't done until the late September. But then I thought, how awesome is that? That the idea of it being done in late June now is considered late. Think about the culture change that represents. How much the bar has been raised. How much the expectations have been changed. That we're going to get it done, and we're going to get it done in time. We're going to balance it for real. We're going to pay down the debt. By the way, we paid down debt $23 billion now. We have reduced the liabilities of the state of Michigan by $23 billion. The rainy day fund, when we started, had hardly anything in it. Would have run state government for a total of 32 minutes. That was our state's rainy day fund on January 1st, 2011. Today, it has almost $900 million in it. And we're approaching $1 billion. I mean, there's so much that has happened here in our state. Job growth, 540,000 new jobs. And the value-added process, by the way, capturing more of that in the food industry here in Michigan has been a really big and important part of that process. We had another level of tax reform that came later to get rid of the industrial personal property tax, again, with the value-added process for turning commodities into finished products. One of the big beneficiaries of the elimination of the industrial personal property tax. I think that when you make investments in equipment in Michigan, we ought to send you a thank you note, not a tax bill. And so there's a lot of change that has happened in our state. We went from being literally the state that lost more than anybody else, lost more population, lost more income, lost more jobs, went from worst to first in manufacturing jobs. We're number 6 overall, so we know that it's diverse in all of our different industries that are adding jobs right now. Our biggest problem before used to be no jobs. Now it's not enough people with the right skills to fill all the jobs that are open. There are over 100,000 open jobs in our state right now as we speak. I hear employers say things like, listen, I don't even care about skills. Give me somebody to show up for work on time and pass a drug test. And that's why as we look forward into the future, the most important thing that we can do is connect people with what they need to be successful in a 21st century global economy. So we have to make our K-12 system the top priority. It's the idea of kids going to school ready to learn. It's making sure that every single kid becomes a great reader. Because regardless of what your priorities are in the future, I assure you that making sure that every single kid becomes a great reader will be accomplished or helped in attainment of that goal. It's so essential. And then bringing back more diversity to our primary education system, where we stop telling the kids the lie that there's only one thing that constitutes success. That when you're growing and you're deciding what you want to do with your life, that going to a college or a university, that's a great thing that you could do, but it's not the only thing that you can do. Bringing back skilled trades in a big way, professional trades in a big way, career counseling in a big way, to show kids everything they could do with their life and then connect them with what they need to go out there, chase their hopes and dreams, their aspirations, have a chance of reaching them. And making sure no matter what industry that you're in, that Michigan is the best place to find that future that you want for yourself and for your family. And so as we move forward now, I think about a lot of the things that we're moving toward and debating about today, and how far Michigan has come, and the way our problems change from not enough jobs to not enough people to fill all the jobs. And as problems go, this is one of the better ones to have. So we need to go all in on our people. And that means skilled and professional trades, bringing them back. It means the best K-12 system, because it's what our kids deserve. And it means social service reform, where we don't just help people survive at a place of dependence, but we help them in ways that achieve more independence for them. In other words, helping them to get back to work. Because work's good for people. It's not something we need to be protecting people from. Work's good for us. So I want to thank you for what you do. There's no harder workers than people in this room. I want to thank you for what you do and the difference that you make every single day, and I'll look forward to taking your questions.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Now we're going to begin the question and answer segment of the forum. We're going to begin with the questions submitted by the agriculture organizations and then move on to questions from the audience. Again, to submit a question, please write it on the back of the card you received at check-in, and you can also text those in to 616-528-8324. This, again, is a forum, not a debate, so the candidates will each have equal time to submit questions, to answer questions, and will not respond to each other's answers. After the question is asked, each candidate will have 2 minutes to answer, and I'll lift a paper when you get to about 20 seconds. So, Senator Kohlbeck, if you would begin, our first question is, how do you feel about the future of animal agriculture in the state? Do you feel it is a benefit to grow these industries in our state?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I want to grow all the different industries in the state. And here's kind of how I view economic development in general, though. And you heard it a little bit in the opening statement. Right now, I don't know how many of you are really excited when we hear about a new policy where we're going to promote special tax credits for battery manufacturers or data centers or anything else like that, right? Not too thrilled when you hear about that happen, especially because most of it's downstate and in areas that are more urban. And you're probably not too thrilled when you hear about the Gilbert bills that give a special tax exemption status and tax privileges for a certain number of big transformational projects or good jobs bill that are targeted at specific areas. It gets a little frustrating when you see the government using your tax dollars to go off and pick winners and losers. And it's about $1 billion that we spend every single year on the Michigan Economic Development Corporation and the Michigan Strategic Fund for the government essentially to play venture capitalists with your money. They go off and try to identify what industries are going to work and what industries are not going to work. I have a fundamentally different approach. I believe that you are the ones that can best determine what industries are going to work because you're the ones actually growing it. And so the government should not be in the business of going off and doing that picking winners and losers. I want an even playing field for everybody. That's what I mean by a broad-based economic development plan. So if animal agriculture market is something that grows, and it's going to be based on the fact that we've got a good environment to go off and raise animals in the state. If it's going to be about plant-based economy around agriculture, all you have to do is drive all around the state to understand that this is a very good place to go off and have a farm in the state of Michigan because it's prosperous. Not because the government told you to have a farm, but because you saw it was a good place or a good way of going off and getting your livelihood. That is an opportunity to go off and put the power and decision as to whether or not something in industry thrives into your hands, not in the government's hands. So what you'll see with me is an appreciation for broad-based economic development, no more picking winners and losers.
Dr. Hines?
Animal agriculture, this is exciting to me. I love animals. And so it almost seems like a silly question, but I know that it's a serious question. And I want to just preface by saying that I don't know everything. Did you hear what I had to say? I really don't know everything. I've been reading and studying the issues on agriculture, and I think it's fair to you to realize that I don't know everything, but as I've studied and read about cattle and pork and poultry, I'm amazed. We have over 500 million cattle here in Michigan. If you just look at dairy, that's a $15 billion industry. Wow. It provides for 40,000 jobs. In 2016, it produced 11 billion pounds of milk. I don't know if anybody had milk over here this morning, but didn't it taste good if you had it? It was great. And with pork, a million hogs in Michigan, 2,000 farms, bringing in $500 million, 6 million boilers, 5 million turkeys. Wow, that's incredible. Realize that those of you that do animal agriculture, you're providing the food for millions of people. That should give a sense of satisfaction that you're really, your labor is producing something. It produces wealth. It bolsters the local economy and the international economy. I almost thought that this morning I would have cold milk with eggs and bacon. Doesn't that sound good? I wish I had had it. I'm optimistic about animal agriculture. Keep working, keep doing it.
Thank you. And Lieutenant Governor Calley?
Yes, critically important as a star, and under my administration, we'll be treated like a star. I'm done.
All right. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. We'll move on to our second question here, and Dr. Hines, we'll begin with you this time. 12 other states have initiated programs that have made the farm business transition a little more appealing to the next generation through a loan guarantee program or a tax incentive. Would you consider a state-specific program to inspire Michigan's young and beginning farmers, and how would you formulate such a program?
I don't think I would promote the program, but I would agree that we need to inspire our young men and women, young farmers, to work on the farm. So I wouldn't promote the program, but we need to come up with something that will inspire your children and your grandchildren to continue the family business, because it's so critically important for this state. So how do you do that? Well, you make farming interesting. It's become so technological. It's intriguing. It's exciting. Another thing you do is you keep taxes and regulations under control. Low. Taxes and regulations under control so that you as farmers can make a profit. Because as much as you might want to give an incentive to your young person to work on the farm, if they can't make a profit, they are not going to do it. If it's in their blood to do it, then we need to keep the taxes and regulations low so that they will make a profit and they will come and work on the farm.
I wouldn't support getting into loan guarantees from the state. I mean, making credit decisions is not a core competency of government, telling the difference between one that's a good risk and a bad risk. I used to be in banking myself, and banks even have a hard time with this, and it's like 100% of what they do. It's just not a competency of state government. But I will say creating an environment of success around the industry, and to the extent that access to capital is a problem, chances are if it's a problem for this industry, that means it's a problem for other industries as well. So when we look at issues like access to capital for transition, to the extent that we do things to help, we need to make sure that they're the sorts of things that would help with any the passing off any business from one generation to the next. There are a lot of really great examples of multi-generational businesses here in our state. We're very blessed to have that, and some that have been generation after generation after generation. And so if there is a tax law or something that's in the way of transition from one generation to the next, going after and fixing that is important, but we just need to make sure we fix it for everybody at the same time. Now, when it comes to the overall environment for success in agriculture, I think the regulatory environment and the availability of workforce are probably the two biggest areas that we need to be constantly moving forward or creating a better environment for. And that is so in those two areas, I think those are areas where I think the state can really be of help. So I'll just give you an example with when it comes to our educational system, right? We teach chemistry and biology. There's a lot of chemistry and biology that you can learn on the farm. And why we wouldn't teach in a much more hands-on way and show kids the things that they could do with their lives, I don't know. I think that would be a very common sense approach to both supplement the education that our kids are getting in our primary education system, but also exposing them to careers that they can have there in agriculture. And then number two, the regulatory environment, protecting and defending the Right to Farm Act, and then also recognizing farmers for the environmentalists that you are, really the original environmentalist and the original, like the inventors of sustainability, right? That's what agriculture is. I think that that when it comes to regulations, that there's a lot that farmers could really teach the government.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, there's a couple things on this. Number one, around tax policy, another one around regulation. So tax policy, if you're eliminating the state personal income tax, when you do that transition, you don't have to worry about getting hit with that tax originally when somebody passes over the assets from one family member to another family member. And that's something that's pretty important. And by the way, just to highlight, a lot of people, when I say eliminate the state personal income tax, they say, yeah, I've heard it before. Everybody talks about tax decreases. I've actually got a plan to do this. This isn't a case where you take it from 4.25% to 0% with a wave of a magic wand. It's actually milestone-based, step-by-step, starts in on, if you want to find out the detailed plan, just go up to ColbeckForGovernor.com, and Detroit News had an editorial on it as well. It is, like engineers do, it's a very practical problem-solving approach, and it just takes leadership and a focus on prioritizing somebody besides the special interests up in Lansing. The second part is dealing with regulations, because there's a barrier, you know, when somebody's been taking care of the farm for a long time in a family, and they've handled all the paperwork and all the bureaucracy for so many years, and then all of a sudden it gets handed off to somebody else in the family, and they get the first thing they get is the transition of all the different binders on how to manage the water, how to manage pesticides, all this stuff. It just stacks up with all the binders that are out there, and that's a barrier of entry as well. And so addressing the regulatory environment around that is something that needs to be addressed as well. It has to simplify it and lower that barrier of entry for folks, and we can provide assistance to manage through some of these common issues that people will face on a regular basis, and that's no problem. We can provide a resource center at the state of Michigan, but when it gets into the thou shalt and all the regulations that get that burden, especially young farmers and young farming families, that's something that we need to address and minimize as much as possible. Thanks.
Thank you. For our next question, we'll begin with Lieutenant Governor Calley. Michigan is home to 5 ethanol plants, which use 134 million bushels of corn each year. Will you support policies that would grow Michigan's ethanol industry, including increased ethanol infrastructure and using E85 in the state's fleet of flex fuel vehicles?
I actually happen to have an ethanol plant pretty close to where I live. It was a big benefit to the area because, you know, right north of there, there's this huge chicken farm, which, you know, those don't smell quite as nice, but it smells like popcorn around the ethanol plant all the time. So it's really nice. It kind of gives way to a much more pleasure. You go south on 66. At the end of the day, we need to accommodate all these different uses, and the markets have really the markets have grown to accept ethanol in a pretty robust way. So I don't think at the state level there's a big role to play when it comes to you know, forcing the industry one way or another when it comes to types of fuel and that sort of thing, to the extent that E85 vehicles in the state's fleet match up well in terms of cost and efficiency to in the bidding process, then I would absolutely be open to that. But I do think it has to make sense, right? So we have a process when we buy fleets. There's a bidding process, and we look at fuel efficiency and costs and all of those different things, and all those things need to be taken into consideration. So it's got to earn the business, but ultimately, I think that the industry has done a really good job of getting out there in the marketplace and gaining general acceptance and favorability with the marketplace.
Thank you, Senator Colbeck.
Ultimately, I'm going to do what's in the best interest of the taxpayers. And so if it's lower cost to go off and maintain a fleet of ethanol vehicles, then we'll do that. If it's not in the best interest of the taxpayers to go off and do that, we won't do that. And it's got to be for all of our taxpayers. Remember, that Article 1, Section 1 of our Michigan Constitution says it's our policies are intended for the equal benefit of all of our citizens. That is not just a constitutional piece of paperwork. That's a social compact. We all got together as a state and said, this is what we agree to. These are the fundamental principles. And you'll hear the word principle a lot because I've actually lived up to these principles in the time that I've been in the service in the state Senate. And it's just the way I roll. It's the way I'm going to roll as your next governor. We got to focus on these basic principles because if we go off and lower the total cost of government across the board, that means more of that money is going to go back in your pockets anyway. That means that that's for your benefit as well. And so if it comes down to having a targeted set of economic policies or a targeted set of incentives, if you will, around a specific industry, it's not something that I support.
And Dr. Hines?
I find the subject intriguing. I was a chemistry major in college, and so just looking at how you make ethanol out of corn and the byproducts of what you're not using for ethanol but using for other things, I find very interesting. So I like the topic. I like the idea. I believe that Michigan farmers are making growing enough corn for both the ethanol business and for food. So I don't think there's a problem there. I would support increasing the infrastructure. I would not support our flex fleet going to E85. We're utilizing E10 now. I think that's great. I think if we went to E15, that would be even better for the state, better for our corn growers. But ethanol has an energy production that's about a third less than regular gasoline. And so I believe that if we went to E85, this would be a bad move for the state because it would make the use of our vehicles much more expensive than it would otherwise need to be.
All right, and we'll move on now to our next question here. Senator Colbeck, if you would start us off with what do you think the amendment of the state's Right to Farm Act in 1999 addressing preemption of local government's ordinance means? And what action would you take to enforce the right to farm law?
Well, let's start with enforcement because we got a law on the books and the Attorney General's office is responsible for enforcement of our laws of the state. And so, and a lot of people, kind of cherry pick which laws they want to enforce or not enforce. If it's on the books, if it's a law, we need to go off and enforce it. And when it comes to the Right to Farm Act specifically, and this is kind of interesting because when it was first put out there, it was trying to encourage, we're dealing with the encroachment of urban development into farm communities. And now in some cases, we've actually got the exact opposite going on where we've got the encroachment of farms in on urban communities, if you will, and which is something that I like to see, frankly. You don't have to worry about traveling over some of our bumpy roads as far if you're actually growing the food worth being consumed in some cases. But I support the amendments around the local ordinances. I'm not a big preemption guy when it comes to local control. But ultimately, this boils down to property rights discussion and the idea that if somebody buys a parcel of land, they should be able to use that parcel of land in accordance with whatever Alexa here says we should be able to, no, I'm just, we should be able to use that parcel of land as we see fit. You have to be a good neighbor with your neighbors, and we all know farming carries with it some of the same issues you're gonna find with landfills every once in a while, right? So there's a compost season, and when I hear objections with a lot of the people in my district, most of it's dealing around the compost. But as long as the expectations are managed around that effectively with people, it should be no problem. And so I am a big advocate of people being able to use the property as they see fit and let the free market dictate. When we do have laws on the books, we need to enforce them.
Thank you. Dr. Hines?
The amendment to 1999 took us from just looking at nuisance lawsuits against farmers, so that is if you're a farmer and someone doesn't like the odor coming from your farm or the noise, they could file a nuisance lawsuit and shut you down as a farmer because it's expensive to take that to court. The amendment in 1999 left that provision, which I think was very good, but it also added it added an interesting part that deals with zoning. So as we've gone from a rural community to more of an urban community, we've had people say, I want to move out into the country. I like cows, I like pigs, not realizing that they make noise and there's an odor. And so then they would go to their local board and change the zoning laws, which would essentially shut down farmers. And so the amendment to 1999 of the Right to Farming Act changed that. So it made it such that those zone changes would not shut down the farmer and would not lead to lawsuits. So I'm very open to that. I'm positive. As Senator Colbeck mentioned, now we have in urban areas houses being torn down because they're not any good, and people want to have a little farm in town with maybe a rooster. Okay? A rooster's crow. Oh, in Africa we had those all the time. That would be the first chicken that I would kill, would be the rooster. But if you can imagine, now you're living in town and there's a rooster crowing, and then there's the odor of a pig or two or goats. And so there are protections that need to be in place for those people that are in the urban area that are setting up a little farm, so that neighbors are then not able to zone those individuals out. So we're really moving into urban. You know what? Is that noise mean I'm supposed to stop?
No, it is not you.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking, wow, I haven't really talked very much. And the second part of the question had to do with
the enforcement of right to farm.
The enforcement really falls within the judicial branch, and the Supreme Court has looked at a number of these issues because they can be quite complex. You have a large farm and a group of non-farming people want to shut you down. And so some of those cases end up in the Supreme Court and are decided by the judicial branch.
Totally, completely, 100% support of right to farm. I think this is one of the fundamentals of the success in our state. You know, freedom equals economic opportunity. And this is a great example. It's an area that really has withstood it. It actually kept on growing. Most of agriculture kept on growing even when the rest of the state was going down. And having a regulatory environment that its underpinnings are something like the Right to Farm Act is a really important part of that. I think it's a great experiment to show that more freedom and authority over your own property creates more opportunity. I will say that the Right to Farm Act, it is a local preemption, and it needs to be enforced as a local preemption. So we of course, there has to be a high bar for local preemption laws. This one unquestionably meets that high bar, and it is the law of the land. And so as people look to try and find you know, ways around it or ways to deal with it without changing the law, the ways to try and still chip away at right to farm, the rights that you have under right to farm, it is important that the executive branch aggressively defend it. This is one of the, to me, this is a non-negotiable. This is so fundamentally important to the industry. So I want to come out of this with a very direct statement that right to farm will be absolutely defended under my administration, and efforts to reinterpret it, to narrow it, will be vigorously opposed.
Thank you. And we'll move on to our next question. Dr. Hines, if you would begin for us this time. In order to expand Michigan's agriculture industry, we need access to essential natural resources like water. What would your administration do to ensure access to these key natural resources?
I think, first of all, GAMS needs to be enforced. The general agricultural standards need to be followed. I think that farms need to use new technology. They need to use irrigation. They need to use pumps and so forth. These are very important. But also, there are certain rights that farmers have as it relates to water, and that is the use of the water under the property that they own. Those water rights belong to the owner of that property, in this case, farmers. Certainly, we don't want to do things with water that harm our neighbors, nor do we want to contaminate the water that we have, so with chemicals, fertilizers, and so pesticides, and so forth. So farmers are conservative people, just like hunters are. We like to conserve the environment that we live and work in. And so I think that this is critically important, and that is to follow GAMP's guidelines, to use apparatuses on the farm that allow you to get the water, and then to actually use the water that is below your property.
Thank you.
It's another one of the fundamentals here in Michigan is that your water is your water, right? So you shouldn't be charged to use your water. So this is when it comes to things that uses on your property and runoff and to other property and that sort of thing. Of course, there are aspects where that has to be managed, and there are regulations around that. But ultimately, I think if it's the basis of the question, I want to make clear that your water is your water. And it seems like every term there's somebody that kind of pushes the idea that you should be charged by per gallon or something, amount of water that you use. That doesn't make any sense. That's a taking of your property rights. And so under a county administration, your water will remain your water.
Thank you, Senator Colbeck.
Yeah, thank you very much. I've talked to a lot of farmers on this particular topic. In some places, water usage is not a big deal. I mean, they could water their whole, all their crops without any issue. They're not going to bump into any of the issues with the aquifer being used by another farmer next door that drains it. And it's plenty of water for all of them that are out there. Some areas becomes a little bit tighter, and so the usage of that water underneath somebody's property actually starts draining water from somebody else using it from the same aquifer underneath. That's where things get a little bit more complex. And I think one of the things that they've done out in Southwest Michigan is actually start doing a model of the watersheds that are out there and understanding what the various usage is and the different rates. And I think that's something we can have as a tool from a government perspective, go off and provide it to different people and say, here are some acceptable guidelines that we should go off and use for those different areas. But when it comes to actually trying to usurp somebody's property rights and take away their access to the water, something I'm diametrically opposed to. It's something we should be respecting somebody's access to the water. And most of the water usage that we have when it comes to farming is open loop. I mean, you're spraying it out there, but it's going to come back down into the same ground, and it'll eventually find its way back down into the aquifer if that's where you're drawing it from. And so, matter of fact, I actually studied environmental engineering here on campus at Michigan State University. So if anything is wrong in anything that I'm saying, I think some of the professors are not too far away from here, all right? But I want to make sure everybody understands we're going to protect the property rights, but there is something we can do as a government to go off and study individual watersheds where we do tend to get some conflict between water usage between one property and another, because all these are interconnected underneath, and if one's using it more at a high usage rate and the other one's not using it at much of a usage rate at all, but they run out of it because of their next door neighbor, we've got to go off and address that. And first policy always is just awareness and transparency. It's not go off and regulate the heck out of it.
Thank you. Our next question here, Lieutenant Governor Kelly, if you would begin. Michigan's cattle industry has suffered decades of restrictions and closed markets because bovine tuberculosis is an epidemic in Michigan's wild white-tailed deer. How will state government improve and safeguard the health of Michigan's wildlife population under your administration?
Well, it has to be treated very aggressively, and it creates conflict, right? Every time there's a problem and a quarantine, it does create conflict, but the risk of our food source has to be paramount. And during the last decade, most areas in state government, including the DNR and those who were working in these areas, particularly with disease control and enforcement and COs and so forth, that everything in state government pretty much shrunk. This is an area, though, where we're in recent years, hopefully, you've seen a much more aggressive posture toward the management of the disease in the herd. Now, I'm not an expert on the disease and how to control it. But I do know that removal of diseased animals and keeping those diseased animals from having contact and with other animals, particularly those that are part of our food source, is really important. So I would look to you as a source and as a resource and as a an advisor when it comes to what it takes in order to control for the spread of this disease, because we want our products to be consumed and sold all over the world. And this is one of the inhibitors to not just all over the world, but even all over the country or all over our state that we really have to get in control of.
Thank you. Senator Colbeck?
Well, on the topic of oversight, a lot of the bovine tuberculosis that we've gotten, I think most of it's focused up in the Alpena area, and I think 75% of the cases that we've seen out there are focusing on them. So I'm definitely an advocate of thinning the herd around deer, but we also need to recognize that when we bring in herds or cattle from other states, we want to make sure that they're clean as well. From what I understand, a lot of the cattle that actually did contaminate the Michigan herd actually came from Indiana, and we need to look at oversight in regards to what are we bringing into the state as far as contaminated cattle. Overall, we just got to make sure that we thin the herd, get rid of those sources, but we also need to look, you got to be careful how you implement some of these policies, and if it comes down to the legislature going off and specifying specific management techniques on that, I can tell you that, there's no experts up in the legislature on some of these issues. And when we get real granular on the type of provisions about describing a specific cattle like we did on, like we're proposing and we're working on with this feral swine, so this kind of gets into this area where we're trying to put in definitions in the law that have no bearing in reality sometimes, and it gets problematic, and you got to be careful how the legislature goes off and puts something in the statute that would be best managed in another capacity outside of that. So I'm a little weary or a little leery of anything being put into law that's going to legislate certain restrictions. And in the executive branch, you got to be very careful about the regulations that you put in, because I want to make sure that we promote the economic well-being of all of our farmers across the board. And sometimes when we put forward some of those regulations, we actually are ending up putting certain types of farmers out of business, and I don't support that.
Thank you. Dr. Hines?
So bovine tuberculosis is a bacteria. It's transmitted through the respiratory tract. So when the deer or the cow sneezes or they breathe on each other, they can transmit the disease. And of course, deer are in your fields. Cows, cattle are in your fields, and so it's spread from cow to deer or deer to the cattle that are on your farm. This is really, really difficult to control, because although you can control your cattle, you can't control where the deer are. You can't say, oh, there's a fence, because it'll just jump over the fence. I think what we've done up to this point is restrict movement across county lines. I think that's a good move. The hunters are also concerned about this issue, and so one of the things that the DNR has pushed is if you do bait, you limit the amount of bait that you put out, because that little bait pile is a source where the deer come in, and then they spread the germs, and then those germs then are spread to your cows. So it's an issue. It's hard to regulate. It's very hard to control, and it can devastate, however, a herd, and so we need to be very careful when cattle come from other states or other parts of the state, that they're examined so we know that they're not infected.
I think they're playing the music to play us off stage here. With that, I think we'll conclude the question and answer portion of the forum. And candidates, if you'd each like to take 2 to 3 minutes to summarize your closing statements, maybe we'll wait just a moment.
Well, I'll go ahead and start, and I'll just try and speak real smoothly to you as we close down our gathering today. Well, thank you for the invitation to be here. I really do appreciate it. I appreciate everything that you do. For my part, I want to say that that I view each of you as a room. I see a lot of friends across the room, by the way. I've been to some of your houses, even. And so I want to say thank you for the partnership that we have had with you over the course of the last 7 years. I know I can speak for Governor Snyder when I say that that we do view agriculture in Michigan as literally a partner in the comeback, and the reinvention has been and it has played an extraordinary role in the strength, the very fabric of our state. It is that important. And so for each of us, and I don't think any of us, you know, we all touch agriculture in different ways. None of us have made a living that way though before, and so that makes you even that this partnership even that much more important. As we move forward into the future, it's not going to become less important; it's going to become more important. And if you think about it, it's, you know, we've been talking in terms of agriculture, the economy, and regulations and those sorts of things, but. To me, production, domestic production of food, it's really a national security interest. It puts it at a different level of importance. And the role that Michigan plays, the role that Michigan agriculture, that Michigan food plays in securing the welfare of our nation is, I don't think it would be possible to overstate that. And so please look forward into the future. Think of me as a partner, somebody that wants your friendship and your advice and your counsel as we move forward. And as you know how it is with in-laws, that you got a hook there, right? So I get a lot of feedback and perspective. I only scratched the surface when I told you about the Sunday dinner, but really just my life, so much of my life is surrounded by agriculture, and I'll close with this. Just yesterday, we were in Ionia. I live in Ionia, in Portland, Ionia County, and there's a family who has a daughter with leukemia, and at the local KFC hall, there was a benefit, and these are very, very, very active members in Farm Bureau, and that's how I know this family, and. After church, Julie and I stopped by. That's where we had lunch before we went off to the farm. And the entire town was there. You couldn't even fit in the thing. I mean, it was, you know, lined up, and it went on for 4 hours. And as I looked around, I mean, it was, I live in a place where both the economy and the landscape is dominated by agriculture. And what I saw yesterday, It's not an extraordinary thing. It's the normal thing that happens where I'm from. And I don't think it's a mistake that it's a community that is built on the timeless principles of what it means to work hard and to produce and to make things and to take care of each other. And I'm just so proud of the community that I'm from. And as I look across the room here, you look like the community where I'm from. Thank you.
Dr. Hines?
It's been a pleasure being here. And again, I'm Dr. Jim Hines. I'm a medical doctor, a former missionary to Africa, a small business owner who believes that the government works for the people, not the other way around. It was Ronald Reagan who said that the genius of America is its people. He also said that putting people first is America's secret weapon. He actually said putting people first is America's secret weapon because it spurs us, it pushes each of us to dream, to dare, and to take great risks for the greater good of all of us, to dream about what you could become or what you might do. This is what we want to inspire our children with. We want them to know that the agricultural business of Michigan is not dead. We want them to dream about what they might become, what they might do, and then to take the risks, financial risk, educational risk, to actually do it. Putting people first pushes businesses and families to thrive. Our state government has not always done a very good job at this. You think of the Flint water crisis, you think of the unemployment insurance agency with 40,000 individuals wrongly accused of fraud. You think of how we've treated our veterans. You think of the overreach of the DEQ. Instead of being our partners, are overreaching their bounds. I'm the only Republican gubernatorial candidate who's not looking for its next job. I'm not a politician. I'm not looking for another office. I will govern as a conservative who believes that the government works for the people. I believe that together, as we work together, that we can make a better Michigan. I'm convinced of it. We can make a better Michigan leading into the next decade. I am Jim Hines, and I'll ask for your vote come December. No, August already. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Senator Colbeck.
Thank you very much. The fundamental question I want each and every one of us to ask is, do you want more government involvement in your life or less government involvement in your life? Do you think that the folks up in Lansing know more how to run your farm than you do? That's the fundamental question. And a lot of people can say what they want on the campaign trail about being for limited government, but ultimately it comes down to what's their record. Serving in the crucible of public service is not pleasant. Matter of fact, it's safe to say this has been my least favorite job that I've ever had in my life. But what I found about 10 years ago when we started getting woken up to the world of politics is that there's a lot of people that thrive on this, and that if people like me do not get engaged in the public square, there are people that are more than willing to take advantage of the fact that I'm not paying attention to what's going on up here to use it for their own benefit. And it turns into a government where the people that have the power are the ones that are getting their policies pushed forward to the detriment of the people that are not engaged in the civil environment. I mean, I started off, when I first decided to run for office, my wife and I had a very good life. We had a successful business, but what I found out was that just because I wasn't paying attention to politics didn't mean politics wasn't paying attention to me. And so I got out of my comfort zone back in 2010 and made the commitment to go off and run for office. And I've been serving in that crucible of public service for the last 7 years plus. And I got a track record that says not only did I have nice things on all my campaign literature saying all the cool things I would go off and do, but I actually followed through on that with my service. And I just really appreciate it. When you go off and look at what's actually going to be at stake in this upcoming election, somebody's got something in the microwave that just probably, I don't know who's in charge of all the sound effects for this, but I've got a few I'd like to put in the queue next time if we could. Fundamentally, you will find somebody who serves with principle. I'm not an expert in agriculture. I would love that most of the folks that are up in state government are not experts in agriculture. You are the experts in agriculture. And my platform, everything that I seek to do, we could actually, you guys, we never practice any songs beforehand, but I mean, I know Lieutenant Governor can tickle the ivories pretty nicely here, so we can, but I ultimately, I feel like I'm giving my testimony at church here. I think so. So, anyway, I can't get them. I think this is designed to see how we work under non-prescription service, or and react to impromptu, but ultimately, my goal is to empower each and every one of you. I encourage you to go off and look at ColbeckForGovernor.com. Every principled solution that I put forward is out for your best interest, not mine. This is not my favorite job. Seeking for governor is a case where I'm seeking it because I don't want somebody who really wants that position seeking that position. There are some people that are going off and looking at it as their golden ring that they're entitled to. That's not the way I look at it. This is a service mantle, and I will serve you in a manner that makes you proud. And that's Patrick Colbeck. I'm running for governor. I appreciate your vote. Thank you guys very much for your attention and your musical interlude.
Candidates, thank you very much for your time and thoughts on Michigan agriculture. We know your schedules are very busy, and your attendance here today demonstrates your commitment to Michigan's second largest industry. Thank you. We'll take just a short 10-minute break here and hopefully address the AV, and then we'll begin and invite our Democratic candidates up on stage in 10 minutes. Thank you. All right.